friends.
Hi.
It's going to take a little bit for everybody to get in the room here. But say hello in the chat whenever you get in here. Let us know where you're tuning in from. I'm seeing the room fill up. We've got several people there. Mm-hmm. Oh, we just made a jump. Hey, guys. From Aurora, Brian and Stephanie. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, guys. Did you guys see that we are supposed... Okay, I'm assuming that's Aurora, like...
Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Right? But did you guys see that we are supposed to have snow over...
The next couple days.
The next few days.
I'm like... Nuts.
What is that?
It's 80 degrees last week.
I know. Then, oh my gosh, that's crazy. If you're in the room, say hello in the chat if you want to. Hey, Dave and Pollyanna. Good to see you guys. Glad that you could join us. And Brian and Stephanie. Yay. We are nodding our heads thinking you can see us. But yes, we did see that. I love it. Nope. Sorry. We can't see you nodding your head.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to use the chat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Hi, David and Deborah.
David and Holly, John and Beth. Yay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, as people get in here, we'll throw up one of our, for a couple, I guess they both will launch at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to throw up a couple of polls here. So if you should see the questions on there, we would love to know. I recently started calling this whole coronavirus thing the Great Pause. Because I feel like that's what it is. It's like this big pause button. So I'd love to know. Can you guys see the questions? And if so, can you answer them? Ah, there we go. We're getting some responses back. I know it'll take a minute for you to probably read them before you can actually respond to them. But we'd love to know.
You didn't have anything in there that said, my extrovert husband is wondering when he can see lots of people again.
Yes, guys, my extrovert husband is wondering.
He's struggling. I want people.
Honestly, tonight is just for him because he can interact with all of you.
Yeah. We are staying at this all night.
Oh, I love it. Holly says, he thinks sex and I think time. Okay. Okay. That's okay.
Those can work together.
The biggest, I'm assuming, Holly, that is, were you guys talking about how you're feeling? No, about the biggest marriage struggle. Is that what you were referring to? Oh, actually, it's the kids being home from college. Yeah. You know,
I mess with you.
Yeah. Holly, are you in my Empty Nest Full Life Facebook group? Because I just posted a great, okay. Did you see the article about Empty Nest Interrupted? It was just posted. I didn't post it. Another gal did, but it should be right towards the top of the page. And that's what it's called, Empty Nest Interrupted. And it was really good because it was all about how all of a sudden, you know, all of these empty nesters who had kids in college, now those kids are home and your empty nest has been interrupted. So good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Gosh, it's equal. For the great pause, half of you are enjoying the margin and half of you are missing the normal and wanting to get back to whatever normal really is.
Yeah, whatever it will be in the return.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What's your biggest marriage struggle right now? Communication. Communication is right up there. It looks like that's the number one. Let me pull down here a little bit more. Other put in the chat. Gotcha. That's where you put the time. And Yeah. Well, and you know what? Time, I mean, the whole kids being home from college thing does mess with sex, mm-hmm. like in a huge way when, you know, all of a sudden you have had all this time together and he still can't read my mind. No, honey, he won't ever be able to read your mind. Yeah. No, yeah. No.
All right. God did not give him that gene.
No, none of our husbands have that. And husbands, none of your wives have that ability. Yeah. We all have to make sure that we are pushing information to each other. We are asking for what we need. We are, you know, just even like setting, you know, one of the things that I would say, the more I've kind of learned about this is even almost setting the stage for our spouse on different things. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, I had a conversation with X kid and about X, and this is what we talked about.
Right.
And I just want you to know.
Right.
Like, you're pushing information to your spouse to let them know that you've had a conversation with one of your kids about a certain topic. And if a decision was made and you, like, you made a decision, or maybe it was just a FYI, mm-hmm. Because, hey, I want you to know this is something that's going on inside of our kid's head. But just even those kind of things where you might have a private conversation with your any of your kids at home, for those of you that had kids at home, mm-hmm. a college student at home, you might have a private conversation with them, but it would be good for your spouse to have the knowledge of that conversation and the context. So if that child ends up having a conversation with them, then they have some form of context for it.
Right.
So that's what pushing information looks like. And that's a really important part of communication as well.
Right. And that can work both ways, not just with you, but if I have conversations, mm-hmm. the kids really do anticipate that we'll talk about those conversations. And so as we both work to push information, I think it gives our kids, even our adult kids, reassurance that we're doing okay, that we're staying in communication, and that we're both aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And mm-hmm. Honestly, guys, we both keep a place in our planners. We both use planners, but you could just use a piece of paper if you don't use a planner. But we keep a list of things to remember to talk to each other about.
Yeah.
Especially when we're apart. Mm-hmm. Like right now, we can just literally jump into that because we're together so much. But you know, if it's not a good time to interrupt, or maybe you're both working, you may be home, but you're both working, mm-hmm. and you want to remember at the end of the day to tell your spouse a story, or you want to remember to tell them about something that happened at work, or you want to remember to tell them about a conversation that you had, jot it down. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, that's one way of making sure that we are staying in touch.
Yeah, it totally is.
All right. Well, we have lots of questions that have come in for tonight's Q&A. And so we are going to jump into those. Feel free as we talk to throw other questions into either the chat, or probably the best place for us is the Q&A. Mm-hmm. If you're not adept at Zoom, if you touch the screen, it'll bring up a little bar at the bottom and you'll see where it says Q&A, and you can actually put questions in there. That will, sometimes the chat moves quickly and we can miss them, but you can put them in the chat too.
Right.
So either place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So one question came in. You guys are focusing on how thinking affects your marriage. Do you really believe that what we think makes that much of a difference?
That we would spend an entire year on it?
Yep. Enough said. No. It totally, for me, the realization is that I would ruminate within my mind, and I would be thinking these negative thoughts, and those negative thoughts would totally fuel my behavior. Well, they'd fuel my emotional responses, and then it would fuel my behavior, and then it would fuel my act or the results. And so it all goes back to how we think. And so if we're having troubles in our marriage, and one of us is chronically thinking negative thoughts, it's going to play out in a negative outcome in your relationship. If you're always thinking the worst in someone, now these are all negative examples, but if you're always thinking the worst, that's going to play out. And so what we are really trying to move us to is positive thinking and evaluating our thinking. Not just, you can't just say, well, I'm going to think positive thoughts today and not do anything with those negative thoughts. It doesn't quite work that way. We've got to be more intentional about ridding ourselves of those negative thoughts and then replacing them.
Right. And part of that is might be using the God tool of acceptance.
Yeah.
And if you'll remember, for those of you that have taken either our course or you've read our book, there's a section about the God tool of, or it's actually in the slow fade of not accepting,
right,
chapter, where Mark took like things that he didn't like about me, mm-hmm, and he made a table up, and right, it was like, these are the things I don't like about Jill,
right,
but then these, and this is why it bothers me.
Yep.
And then this is how I can think of it differently.
Yeah.
So it literally was like a reframing, and that is really important when you begin to recognize that your thought process about your spouse, mm-hmm, is negative.
Yeah.
Or your thought process about your marriage. If you ask Mark at the heart of what fueled your discontent, which eventually led to infidelity, which eventually led to leaving,
mm-hmm,
it was all what was going on up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
the power of our thinking. You know, and just some very simple examples, like Jill can be very direct, very matter of fact, can come off almost as if she's parenting me. And in the past, I would have ruminated that and I would have assigned meaning to that, that she was doing that on purpose, that she's just trying to parent me. And that would just lead us down a road where I'm rigid, I'm fussy, I'm frustrated, and none of that was true. So using the tool of acceptance is, okay, Jill can be very direct. Jill can be matter of fact. I don't have to take that personal. That's her. Now I can have a conversation with her because a secure connector, remember, they ask for what they need. They aren't afraid of conflict. They are willing to engage those healthy, safe conversations so that both husband and wife are getting better at loving each other.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I mean, sometimes I am parenting him. I mean, I would say I do that far less than I used to, mm-hmm, but I can slip into that.
Right.
But also it's my natural style of communication is not flowery. It's very direct.
Yeah.
And very
not flowery.
Yeah. Not flowery at all. Have I learned to be a little bit more flowery for my sensitive heart husband? Yes. Yes, mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I would ever even be it in the same way that you are. I mean, we're just two different people.
We're two different people. we've not talked about this, but so I can tend to be passive and idle and could be assumed that I'm disengaged. How would you respond to that in the past?
I mean, I just would make an assumption that you were disengaged.
Right.
I mean, I would just make that, which that's a new slow fade that we identified just in the last few weeks. And that is a slow fade of assumptions.
Yeah.
Right. And I would have made an assumption that you were not thinking about something, that you were not engaged and, or even that you didn't care.
Right. And then the response to that would be, well, you're not going to engage. I'm going to engage. I'm going to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And so slow fade of assumption is really a powerfully negative slow fade.
So how do we stop it?
Yeah.
Okay. And here's how we stop it. Ask your thoughts.
Yep.
So, for instance, let's just say there's something that I feel like Mark's being passive on. I might ask him, I might literally say, honey, it doesn't feel like you've done anything with selling the car. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Or have you done things that I'm not aware of? So, and I'm thinking because we're selling a car. So,
right. I was frantically going through my mind. We've been talking about this, Jelly.
Yeah. I was just using that as an example because right. It's what came to my mind.
But what a great thing, because assumptions unspoken lead to aggressive behavior and antagonism towards one another. And so if either one of us are aggressive and antagonistic, the other one's going, what'd I do? What's going on?
So I almost, and if you noticed, I was really careful about my words, because I almost said, it doesn't feel like you're doing anything with selling the cars. Is that right?
Ah.
Okay. So A, that had a little bit of a tone to it. And B, it was also making an accusation.
Mm-hmm.
So a different way of saying that is, honey, I know you had talked about wanting to sell the cars. Have you done anything with that maybe I'm not aware of?
Right.
Do you hear the difference in that? One has this accusation that then puts the other person on the defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way really kind of puts us on a team. We're kind of on the same team.
Yeah.
And we're trying to...
Well, it goes back to that communication, that challenge that we started with is pushing information.
Mm-hmm.
That, I tell you what, pushing information has transformed us and our interaction with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It takes care of so many times that we want to assume.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Right. Even today, we were working today and so it was like me saying, I think it was early in the day, I said, I just want you to know the things that are going on in my head for what I want to get done today.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to know what's going on in your head for what you want to get done today. So it was even just pushing that, because in the past I would just, you know, I would just go about my day and then I would get frustrated because he's not on the same page as me.
Right.
But he can't be on the same page as me because I really haven't tuned him into it.
No. Yeah. I wish we could just put a HDMI cable up there.
Yes. Somebody says, I call these negative assumptions judgments. It seems like they often come from unforgiveness. And these judgments put the other person in a box. Yes, I would agree that they definitely are judgmental thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, judgment is usually connected to pride.
Mm-hmm.
So remember the God tool that's the opposite of pride.
Mm-hmm.
is the God tool of humility. So a lot of times we have to, especially as we become more mature in marriage and more mature in our own journey through life, we learn to connect those dots too. We kind of go, well, if it's judgmental, then it's got to have pride. And if it's pride, then I need to do the opposite of pride, which is humility. And it's that God tool of humility. Okay.
Unforgiveness too is, that's a slow fade that just lingers and gets uglier and messier, and it mutates into more of a grossness than what we really understand. And I remember this couple that attended a workshop, a live workshop that we did, and you could just see it in them, this hostility towards one another. And during one of the breaks, he confessed, and he helped us identify the slow fade of unforgiveness. And I tell you what, it was just crazy, the difference. When they walked back in the room, it was like they were totally new people, because he had been harboring this unforgiveness and holding on to things that weren't, holding on to it isn't helpful at all. It was corrupting his soul and robbing him of love and hope.
And there's a over in the date night site, when you click over on the right side where the navigation is, there is a webinar that we did. So you would click on Dynamic Dialogue Webinars, and it was called Are You Hoarding Your Hurts? And if that's a place where you tend to struggle, you struggle with unforgiveness, or you struggle with hoarding your hurts, that would be a really good, it would be a really good piece of content for you to, to tune into. And that might be even one that you just use as an individual, you know? I mean, we create them in thinking that, you know, you can do them together as a couple, but sometimes we have our own individual struggles, and that may be more your struggle than your spouse's. So that would be a good piece of content for you to get in there and watch and dig into.
All right, our next question is, we are starting to get snippy with each other in all this coronavirus togetherness. What can we do to change that? We need help! No. Defensiveness, grace, forgiveness.
Yeah, those were my notes.
Oh. I was like, yeah, you're on the right track. You're doing great.
So what do we do for that? Number one is, man, we got to dial down defensiveness, guys. We have to. And you have to own that. Like, you have to not take the bait. In those moments where, you know, maybe your spouse is snippy with you, you don't have to be snippy back. And you don't have to take their snippiness personally either. You have to recognize, you know what, that's about them. That's about what's going on inside their head. I'm not going to take that bait. And so you can dial that back simply by responding in a way that is different than the way that your spouse just responded.
I think the snippiness happens too, because we're not asking for what we need. Secure connectors do that. We're not communicating with each other. And so in pushing information ahead of to your spouse, that would be transformative. What is it that you're feeling? What is it that you're needing? Maybe you've got a list of things that's going on in your head, but you haven't yet talked about it with your spouse. I tell you, and Jill is a master at a list in her head. And I love it when we sit down and make a list together so that I know what I could work on or how I could help her.
You know, another thing that I was just thinking is, I lost my train of thought.
Okay, I have another one.
Okay, good.
Okay, I'll rescue you. Another issue to think about is personality. And seriously, if your spouse is the extrovert and he's or she's fussy,
that's where I'm.
Then talk about maybe they just want to get out of the house. So go for a walk.
Go for a drive.
Go for a drive. You can't have people in your house, but you could Zoom call, or just a lot of it is navigating the frustration with conversation.
Right. And what I was thinking about is you have, because you are far more emotional than I am, one of the things that you've done a really good job at doing of late is when you just wake up and you feel off, like when you feel fussy for no reason.
Yeah.
And like, you can't even put your finger on it.
Right.
But he'll even say to me, I just need you to know that I am just a little fussy today. I'm just a little irritable and it's not about you. And that's huge for me to know that. And for him to just tell me that, then he's just off. And you know, we all have days, right? I mean, there's a term for that. Somebody that woke up on the wrong side of the bed, right? So we all have days that we wake up on the wrong side of the bed. And so if that's you, maybe you, that's another thing that you also let your spouse know so that they're not taking it personally.
Yeah.
This is also all of this togetherness. We have to use our God tools of grace and forgiveness.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to, you guys. I noticed it today. I didn't even notice it a whole lot yesterday, but today, because we were doing a lot of working together, and Mark, if I don't speak at a certain level, he has a severe hearing loss and he wears hearing aids, but even with his hearing aids in, if I don't speak at a certain level, and so there were multiple times today that it was, huh, what? And I just was like starting to go, and then I was like, Jill, give him grace. It just irritates you. And I mean, he's not listening on purpose.
Right. I don't have anything else playing in my ears.
Sometimes you do, but you didn't today.
No. Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
So use guard against your own defensiveness. If your spouse is defensive, don't take the bait and be defensive back. Use grace and forgiveness.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's another question that came in. What is the best way to use date night? Great question.
Right.
Because this person said, you know, there's so much content in date night, and then you're also sending out new content. And so here's the best way to think of it is, maybe, you know, when you were in college, and you knew that you had to take certain courses, or you wanted to take certain courses because you had certain interests. That is one way you can think of date night, is that you can use it where you can like audit these classes. And of course, they're not semester-long classes. They're like 15-minute classes if you do a double date, or they're 45-minute classes if you do a dive-deep interview. And so you're just choosing a class to tune into. Okay? So that is based upon interest, based upon places where you guys struggle as a couple. So that's one way you could use it. Another way is you can just forget about the library. Don't even worry about it being in there at this point. And you just do what we send out for you to do every week. Because it's going to cover a wide variety of things. You're going to get one double date a month. You're going to get one date night, a fun date night. You're going to get a dive deep interview. And then you're also going to get an extra week where you can catch up, or you can do something in the library, or every 3 months we do one of these live webinars. So you can completely do it by utilizing the library, or you can completely do it by utilizing what we send out every Tuesday, or you can do a mix of both of those. Okay, so any of those work. And if you ever get stuck Remember, we have the Dig Deeper tracks, and the Dig Deeper tracks are where we take a topic. I know the ones that are in there right now are on sexual intimacy and rebuilding trust, and we will be adding more of those. Or you can go to the library where we actually have the kind of like the categories, mm-hmm. and you can click on a category and then, you know, take mm-hmm. that in. You can also reach out to us through email and say, okay, this is a place that we're struggling. What would be three things in the library that you would suggest that we would take in? Mm-hmm. And we can point you that. In that direction.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So good one. All right. I saw another one come in here live. Okay. This is from our question earlier, I think. Can't this also stem from frustrations of seeing what looks like a familiar pattern, tending to be passive or to not engage? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But we're going to believe the best in our spouse. So the way that I asked that question the second time, mm-hmm. okay, I'm believing the best in Mark. Instead of being like, you said you were going to sell the car, but you haven't done anything with it, have you? That is not believing the best in him. Mm-hmm. Hey, honey, I know we had talked about selling the car. Is there anything that you've done on that I'm not aware of, or anything that we need to figure out how to do for a next step on that?
Yeah.
That says I'm believing the best in him, and it says we're a team, and I'm not throwing an accusation. I'm not lobbing a bomb. I'm mm-hmm. not saying it in a way that causes him to be defensive.
Yeah. I think too that it is important that what we say is fueled by what we think. And so if we're thinking, I'm going back to that question.
Yeah.
If we're thinking that
he said he wanted to do it, but he hasn't done it.
And he or she keeps promising, and yet they don't do anything with it. Those are those negative thoughts that are ruminating. And so move from policing your spouse to encouraging.
I would even say inviting.
Inviting, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Inviting them to give you information. Like I am more often than not inviting Jill to share with me the things that are going on in her head, because she's going back to personality. She's a natural introvert. She's an internal processor. So all these things that are going on up there, unless she voices them to me, I don't know. Now she's working harder at telling me what she's thinking, but I still invite her to share with me, what's the list that you have going on in your head, or where are you at on this project, or mm-hmm. just not being antagonistic, but inviting.
And I think that believing the best in your spouse mm-hmm. is huge.
Yeah.
I would challenge you through the remainder of this week to just personally ask yourself to pay attention to, are my thoughts believing the best in my spouse?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they believing the worst?
Right.
And here's the deal. Maybe your spouse is being passive again. Okay. Maybe they are, but you're not going to help it by being antagonistic. The safer you are, the more likely they will move out of the ruts that have defined them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really key and really important to understand. So in essence, with our negative thoughts, which comes out in our tone of voice or the way that we ask something or the way that we say something, that in essence keeps that other person in the place where they are in the rut that they tend to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually play a role in helping them to get out of that rut because you change the way that you interact with them.
Yeah. I was thinking of an illustration. So here, this coffee cup. Imagine that this is a rut. And we were meeting with a couple here recently, and she just felt like that she was more of the passive person and just really struggled. And it really went back to core beliefs and lies about herself that she wasn't good enough. She couldn't ever do anything right. Well, if she didn't come out of the rut or this
hole
in the right way, her husband was quick to be critical of her. And every time he criticized her, she just was like, I'm going back in the hole. I can't do anything right. It doesn't even matter. I'm not even going to try. And what we were really working with him was to believe the best, and for her to believe the best, because really our spouse really wants the best for us. But sometimes we just don't know how to encourage each other and how to speak it. And so we speak it by, first of all, looking at how are we thinking about our spouse? And then we voice those positive affirmations, those doable invitations that really help them to want to step out of the hole and be successful.
Mm-hmm. Because anytime we are leaving a rut, we are leaving, even though the rut isn't necessarily healthy, it's what we know.
It's safe. Yeah.
It feels safe. We know. Yeah. And so mm-hmm. what we want to do is we want to be careful to let the other person, we want to make it safe for them to leave that rut.
Yeah. Yeah.
And find a new path.
Yeah, not a rut, a new path.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly. That's okay. A good one. Okay. So we were coaching a couple this past week, and I think we found another slow fade.
Yep. It was
really interesting. Mm-hmm. So for right now, we're calling it the slow fade of not having fun.
Yep.
Okay. Or the slow fade of not having fun together. And so this brought up something that we used to teach in our No More Perfect, or our in our ABCs of a Healthy Marriage seminars. Because mm-hmm. One of the things that we taught in that was based upon some research that was done by Willard Harley.
Yeah.
Where it was his needs, her needs. And it was 10 needs of a marriage. Okay. Yeah. So let's just say it's 10 needs of a marriage, but five are the top needs of a man and five are the top needs of a woman. And of course they're not the same five needs. Right. So anyway, to illustrate this, one of the needs is the need for, and this usually is a male need, and that is he called it recreational companionship.
Right. And what we coined it was they just want their spouse to come out and play with them.
Right. And oftentimes guys really long for this, and women, mm-hmm. But you may be a woman and that's high for you. Right. So anyway, so we've been married like 2 years.
Oh, you're not going to tell the story, are you?
Maybe 3 years.
I am not condoning this story.
Oh, whatever. So we had been married not very long at all. Mm-mm. And it was Christmas morning. And
it was such a beautiful day. Gifts were large.
Yeah. And there's been this big gift under the tree for a while, and it was heavy and I couldn't imagine what it was. And I opened it up on Christmas morning and it was a bowling ball. Guys.
How many times have we bowled?
I had never bowled. We had never bowled together. Probably the last time I bowled was in high school, which had been years earlier. So I'm like, a bowling ball. Oh, and it wasn't just any old bowling ball. It had my name in it.
And it was her favorite color.
Purple. Yeah.
And it had a matching bag.
It did. It was way
And cool. I went into the bedroom and brought my bowling ball out and said, now we can go bowling together.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think we sold them for like $5 or gave them away. I don't know.
So we didn't ever use them. Honestly, that Christmas morning, I was like, why did you give me a bowling ball? Like, I don't get it. So fast forward, by this time, we've moved to a new community and he plays racquetball with somebody. And he's like, hey, you need to come play racquetball with me. And I'm like, I don't want to play racquetball. And so eventually, you know, that request stopped. And then it was golf. Mm-hmm. He started taking up golf and he's like, oh, you got to play golf with me. And I'm like, Mark, I just don't find the joy in hitting a little white ball all over a big field looking for a hole.
You're breaking my heart.
So anyway, until I read His Needs, Her Needs, and all of a sudden the light bulb went on. And I was like, you know what? My husband and I are cracking up this story. So all of a sudden I realize it wasn't at all about bowling and it wasn't at all about racquetball and it wasn't at all about golf. Mm-mm. My husband was asking me to come out and play with him and I was missing it. Mm-hmm. I was completely missing it. Mm-hmm. And this couple that we were just meeting with the other night, that's also what was somewhat happening is, you know, he would say, let's go do this. And she's, no, I've got this to do and that to do. And really the fun quotient is just gone. That fun piece is just gone. And so we ended up, it's what made us think of that story again. We hadn't thought about that story in forever. And we realized, you know what? This is a slow fade.
Right.
This is a slow fade. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, Willard Harley's, the subtitle of his book is How to Affair-Proof Your Marriage. And the truth is, you know, oftentimes somebody else becomes willing to play. And that's, I mean, it's not okay for you to follow that temptation, but that is a place where I think, you know, some of us can become fuddy-duddies after with all the responsibility in life. And we need to learn how to have some fun again. And so I think that's really key. And understanding that slow fade of not having fun could be doing a number on your marriage. So think about that one as well. Okay, Holly says, I got a motorcycle helmet for Valentine's Day the first year we were married. Not a Valentine's Day gift on my end. Yes. Now you really know why you got that.
Yeah.
Yep, because he really wanted you to come out and play with them. And yep.
Well, and if you think of back to dating, most often you were playing together. And then you get married, life comes along, and pretty soon you're just feeling like roommates. And that boy in, and I hate to put it on guys most often, but most often guys are still that boy that still want to play. So.
Yeah, and quite frankly, we need to learn, if we've become the fuddy-duddy, and I'm not saying that every woman does, but I do see it a lot, and so we need to relax a little bit. We need to be able to go in the moment and have some fun.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. So now we have two more questions, unless anybody else adds any. Oh, somebody added a third one here. Let's just make sure it doesn't apply. Oh, somebody else says, I got a set of snow tires for Christmas when I was expecting an engagement ring with a big play up of how important it was. I guess playing with cars is a guy's hobby too. Oh my goodness, you guys. That's great. That's great. You know, isn't it funny? Gift giving is just a funny thing.
Yeah.
It really is.
How much do you like receiving gifts?
Not at all.
I know. It's quite.
It's like
not even on your
list. Not even on my list. Don't bother giving me a gift. I don't need it. One of the things that you have realized, and we just talked about it not too long ago, and it went along with the whole love thing. Like you've talked about how you were loving in order for what you would get.
Oh, right. Selfishly.
And sometimes the gift giving
was selfish.
Was that way too. Yeah. I think at that time in our marriage, we didn't know how to ask for what we needed.
Right.
So what would have been better than a purple bowling ball with my name engraved in it would have been
diamond studs on it.
No, it would have been better to just say,
I want us to play together again. And what
can we do to have fun, to put fun back in our marriage again?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the better
solution. Would have been cheaper. Would have been more practical.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. That boy that still wants to play made my wife give me a nice little smirk. Oh my goodness. Love it. Okay. Here's a question. Okay. So in reading the book, No More Perfect Marriages, and in reading other research, it's been suggested that when you are asked a question, in this case about fidelity, to be open and honest about the question and answer it to the best of your ability. Okay, so it sounds like what we're talking about is the context of trust has been broken, questions are being asked. So when one person asks a serious question or is asked a serious question, and either way, knowing it will cause hurt and be painful to process, yet with your question or answer, you want to be transparent and honest. How do you introduce or answer that topic knowing you will hurt the other person but not wanting to hurt them? Good question.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, there's no easy place around it. If you try to go around it, you will continue to break trust.
Yeah.
You have to go directly through it. And it's messy. Okay? It's messy. But you do not want any more dishonesty, because dishonesty in this particular case, because this one was talking about fidelity or infidelity, the opposite of that. So there's no easy way. You already hurt your spouse. And quite frankly, even in the cleanup process, hurt will continue. But
if you're honest and if you're answering truthfully, hurt becomes healing. And for me, going back to my selfishness, is that most often I didn't want to hurt Jill, honestly, more about myself. I didn't want the conflict. And what I had to trust was that Jill really was stronger than what I was giving her credit for. And she was showing me that. And that being honest and truthful was the higher road and the right road. And there were times where I would say, you've asked this question. What do you want to know everything? Is that really what you're asking? Or just trying to process, how honest do I be? And every time it was, I want to know, because I don't want to, because what will happen is she would fill in the gaps. And that was more dangerous and more hurtful by her filling in the gaps.
And, you know, when we do work with couples, especially when they are rebuilding trust after something as big as infidelity, you know, it depends. I mean, you have to figure out whether you really need to ask that question. Not all questions that you think of need to be asked, but if you're going to fill in the gap worse, possibly, than what the answer might be, it may be worth it. The other thing that I would say that's really important is you need to anticipate the hurt, not to hold back,
right,
but to comfort mm-hmm. in that moment.
Yeah.
Okay. So in other words, let's just say that your spouse asks a question and you're sitting apart. Okay. Let's just say you're each in your own chair in the family room and you're having some conversation and they ask a question and you want to answer it, but you know that this is going to be painful for them. So you move yourself over in front of them, in front mm-hmm. of the chair, and you hold their hand and you say, I want to answer that honestly. Mm-hmm. I am fearful it will hurt your heart more. But if you really want an answer to that, I want to answer it honestly. Mm-hmm. So you are, there's no flippant answers here. You are holding your spouse's heart in your hands. Mm-hmm. And if your spouse bursts into tears, then you are there to hold them. Mm-hmm. Okay. You are there to even to remind them.
Don't walk away.
As I give you this answer, I want to remind you, I am standing here in front of you. I'm not mm-hmm. going anywhere. I know that I hurt you deeply. I mean, Mark did that so many times for me. Mm-hmm. So he was steadying me before the answer.
Yeah. I was also very committed that I would not be antagonistic or defensive, that I would answer every question, no matter if she asked me the same question a gazillion times. My biggest fear was that I was so caught up in lies that I would go through this thing in my head of, how'd I answer it last time? Well, just tell the truth. And Jill would ask from different angles and I would just tell the truth. And then at times we would talk about it and I would own up to the fact that I was really nervous because I don't want to lie anymore, but I'm so afraid that I have lied. And so it was just really, it was so rewarding. It was so healing. It was the trust that was built from honesty was just very powerful.
So here's another half to this question. Also, if you're on the receiving end, how do you express your emotions or feelings without being defensive, attacking, or reacting to the extreme? For example, saying, well, this is how I've made you feel, or why are you even staying with me? Or this is who I am. If you can't handle that, maybe we should get a divorce. Or are there ways to keep yourself calm and not overreact, or in a safe conversation, not interrupt and become defensive or try to counterattack? Is there any helpful advice on how to accept what is being said without it eating you up on the inside? So
there's a lot in
there. There is a lot in there.
Yeah.
So forgiveness is layered. Mm-hmm. So I would have thought that I had forgiven in a situation, and I had forgiven, but then I would get an answer about something, and that answer would cause me to realize I had another layer to forgive. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you're on that receiving side, you have to, the best way to keep yourself from overreacting is to know ahead of time, you're going to need to hear what it is. Mm-hmm. You have to process that in your head. You have to grieve the pain of it. Then work your way to forgiveness. So if you're the one delivering the hard news, you need to allow your spouse to process what you've told them. Mm-hmm. To grieve what you've told them, because it's just coming face to face with another reality of the mess. Okay. And each time that you reveal that, if you can remember to ask for forgiveness, that is helpful because it does put that question on the table. Because eventually you want your spouse to be able to forgive. I mean, and the only way that you can't end up with that eating you up on the inside is to walk through that forgiveness. Now, here's the other thing is when we are betrayed, and honestly, guys, this is, I say guys for guys and girls. I'm not talking about just men, but when anytime we're betrayed, and this can be with pornography, this can be when we just keep something from our spouse and it gets found out, or it could be something big like infidelity. Any of those things that we do break trust, and it's gonna take being honest and being safe to be honest with to build that trust back up. So one of the reasons that you also want to not, so it's okay to cry and it's okay to even be angry and to express that is really painful for me to know. But it is really important that we do not sin in our anger and that we don't throw our words about. So God's word talks a lot about measuring our words. So in those moments where it's, well, why don't you just divorce me? See, that's when we are just throwing our words out there and we're not measuring them. And so even in hard conversations, we still need to be following what God's word says. And he doesn't say, don't be angry. He just says, don't sin in your anger, which what would sinning in your anger be? It would be calling your spouse a name. It would be holding on to unforgiveness for a long time.
Boy, that this last question, just there's so many layers to it, but I think what's, our flesh wants the hurt to be over and done with now, right now. Just repent, get right, act right, be perfect. Let's get on with life right now. And that is not, that would be an example of an unrealistic expectation. And so it is layers. And when you're peeling an onion, I just want you to think of the strongest, most tear-provoking onion that you've ever cut into and how it just causes everybody in the room to be crying. Well, that's kind of the layer. That's the way it is in peeling back layers of life and layers of hurt. And it gets better, but if everyone will be Christ-like and be steady and act right to the very best of their ability. You're going to make mistakes. It's not going to be perfect. But if you act to the best of your ability, right in the eyes of the Lord, the healing is going to come. What are you thinking?
Well, I was just thinking about the fact that it was the defensiveness and the counterattack. We started out with the phrase, don't take the bait. Okay. And we talked about that kind of when everybody's getting snippy with each other with coronavirus. But guys, when you are dealing with something big where there's been a you know, there's pain in your marriage. Okay. The enemy of this world, there is, there is such a thing as spiritual warfare and God wants your marriage to work. The enemy wants, the Bible says that the enemy comes to steal, divide, and destroy. So we have to be careful to not take the enemy's bait because that's in those moments when we react, when we throw around our words, when we counterattack, when we become defensive, all of those things are tools that the enemy use. Well, I wouldn't say tools. They are tactics that the enemy uses to steal and destroy. So let's just say that you are the one who broke trust and your spouse has asked you a question and you are answering the question honestly. You're doing what you're doing, your absolute best to be steady for them, to reassure that you are here, that you're not going anywhere, that you guys are going to get to the other side of this, but you're going to answer that question. And then your spouse doesn't handle it well. Let's just say they blow up. Okay. Here's a place where you have to say to yourself, don't take the bait.
Right. Stay steady.
Don't take that bait.
Yeah.
Because then they accelerate and then it makes you want to accelerate. Don't do it.
No.
Stay humble, stay steady. And that is what eventually they will work their way back down. You can, you know, say to them, I know that this is incredibly painful for you.
Yeah. And I know I hurt you. I am so deeply sorry for that. And my commitment to you is I will never do this again.
That's really, I think, at the heart of how we stay steady in those really, really hard conversations. And when you are rebuilding trust, there is just a season called the messy middle. So let's not make it messier.
Right. Yeah.
Let's know that it's messy.
Yeah.
There's no, don't try to go around it. Go right through it. Deal with it. It won't be like this for forever. I promise. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good conversation tonight, guys. And great questions. We are so grateful for your interaction and for you being a part of date night. And if you haven't had a chance to take in the double dates with Mark and Jill, the last three, if you just joined us, you might want to go back because those are only 15-minute videos. You could even watch two in a night to kind of, they kind of build on each other. If you want to really learn about taking your thoughts captive, go back to the first marriage mindset one and watch those so that you can be intentional about taking those thoughts captive. We are so grateful to do life and marriage with you guys.
Yes.
So grab your spouse's hand and let's close in prayer.
All right. Father, thank you so much for every couple. Thank you so much for every marriage. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing, the holiness that you're building, and the life that you're creating as we pursue you. Father, I pray for peace. I pray for grace and mercy. I pray that you would help us to utilize your tools to build each other up. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Hey, also, I was just thinking while we were praying, we have decided to do a second Perfect Marriages home edition seminar. It's going to take place the last week of April. So we'll send out information for that. But if you didn't get to take the last one, but it interested you, but it wasn't the right timing and it would interest you to do that again. Or if you know somebody that that would be something that they would want, just watch for the information on that. So it's going to start April 28th and it's going to run April 28th through May 1st. So just that last week of April. But we're super excited. It was really a great, it was a great class. We loved doing it. And so we're looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah.
All right. You guys have a great night.
Have a great night.